Welcome to the Sporting Spotlight here on Dublin City FM with me, Breffni Early. For most people, the thought of completing a marathon sends shivers down their spine. Now imagine doing it every day for a month. This is exactly what our next guest did in the summer of 2010 and followed it up in 2011 by completing 10 iron distance triathlons in 10 consecutive days. An absolute glutton for punishment. I am honoured to have Gerry Duffy on the show. Gerry, welcome to the programme.
Thanks indeed, Breffni. Great to be here.
Gerry, first, talk to us about your childhood in Mullingar and I suppose up to your early 20s or late 20s.
Born a year before man landed on the moon, 68. I had a fantastic childhood, come from a family of five. I'm told I have middle child syndrome and went to school, secondary school in Mullingar, but ironically boarding school. In boarding school, I played a lot of sports in school. You know, big into football, hurling, pitch and putt. Funny, it was a pitch and putt course. It was a boarding school that had its own pitch and putt course. And there was wonderful facilities in the school and I embraced it all. Left school in 1985, went to England for a year, then came back, went to college. Suddenly I was 27. And what I'd realised from 17 until 27 is I'd stopped, with the exception of one exercise, which was playing golf, because I love playing golf. I didn't do any exercise at all. I just became conscious of this at 27, because I saw a photograph of myself and I suddenly realised, and maybe I knew it all along, but I suddenly realised that I was now 4.5 stone heavier than when I left boarding school. And the photograph, I decided to use it as a catalyst to just, no divine master plan, but I guess to begin a journey to going back to where I was in terms of physical health. I was also a heavy smoker at the time. I developed that habit in the interim. And I gave those up immediately, but then went off for a year and a half and then went back in them again and fought a very challenging battle with that over the next 3 or 4 years, but eventually managed to get them up, and that's a long time ago now, thankfully. But a big challenge at the time to give up cigarettes, I have to say. And I think maybe part of the reason why I found it so hard the last time was because I was so determined to give them up. But as I say, in my 20s, I left school very, very happy. In my 20s, I lived in Dublin for a while, then moved back to Mullingar, worked for an insurance company at the time. And in my role, I was in sales at the time and eventually graduated to quite a high level in the company. But I was travelling the length and breadth of the country in a car every day, meeting clients. And doing very little exercise. But I was telling myself I was very, very happy. But in reality, when I got that photograph developed, I suddenly realised, you know, that I wasn't getting much out of life because I wasn't challenging myself.
Tell us about that photograph. The other person in the photograph with you was the well-known golfer, Sergio Ballesteros, one of your childhood idols. But you had an epiphany that day. It was your road to Damascus when you got that photograph developed.
Yeah, I can still remember where I was when I got it developed. It was in the old days when you dropped in an instant camera into the pharmacy and you collected it. I collected it that evening and I was so excited because I got to meet my hero 2 days before, and this was my childhood hero. I met him in the flesh the week before. He was over in Ireland playing golf in the Irish Open in Mount Juliet down in Kilkenny. Got the photograph developed, so excited, couldn't wait to show my friends. Took it outside the pharmacy and stared at it. And it was like somebody, it was like looking in the mirror. And I said to myself, Gerry, you're better than this, you know. And I realised that I was almost 5 stone heavier than when I'd left school. I knew that the photograph, and I've kept the photograph as a significant motivation. I knew I'd one, if not two, packets of cigarettes in the pocket, and it just jolted me. I'm not saying I had any divine master plan to become who I've now become, but it shocked me. It was like somebody putting the jump leads on, self-administering the jump leads, I guess, to begin a journey. And how I began the journey was I simply bought a pair of runners and I went back to running. I was never into running in school. I did run, but never really into running. I was into football and, as I said, the other sports. But I said, well, how am I going to lose the weight? And it seemed like an interesting way to try something different to lose the weight, because I tried to lose the weight many, many times. So I took up running at the age of 27.
So you bought yourself a pair of runners and hit the roads. How hard was that first run?
The first day I went running, I can still picture it. Beautiful sunny morning. I was always a morning person, but I always loved that part of it. And so I've carried that through right through to present day. But the very first run, I went for 3 miles. And I was actually able for it. But the overriding, it was a beautiful sunny morning. I distinctly remember that. I can remember where I went, where I lived at the time, who I shared lodgings with, all of that. And I came back. But in reality, the only thing that was uppermost in my mind was how quickly can you get home to have a cigarette? Because I was still a smoker. I gave up cigarettes 6 months after that. But the first run, I came back and I genuinely did enjoy it, I have to say. I got those positive endorphins, that serotonin connection between two brain cells that that makes us happy, and I got that, and I embraced it straight away. I took to running. Literally, I used to run 3 or 4 times a week for 3 or 4 miles, and I did that for 3 or 4 years.
So your first entry into the world of competitive running, you were cajoled into taking part in a triathlon.
Yeah, my brother rang me in 2004, and he said, do you want to take part in a triathlon? And this is only 9 years ago. And my exact reply to him was, what's a triathlon? I didn't even know what it was at the time. And he explained it involved swimming, cycling, running. And it was, whilst triathlon had been there for 10 or 15 years, it was only very slowly starting to emerge as something that Irish people en masse were becoming aware of. And he explained what it involved. And I said, you know, I was into running at this stage. I was up to a couple of hours of running at this stage because I've been running for 8 or 9 years. But purely quietly and privately on the canals or trails or roads around Mullingar. It took him 3 phone calls to persuade me to sign up. So eventually I signed up, but I did it on condition that I could do it as part of a relay team, because I didn't actually think I had the ability to swim, cycle and run collectively or continually for an hour and a half.
How times have changed.
How times have changed. But I went and I did it. I did a swim because I figured, well, I know I can do the run, do something different, and did a swim. And I just instantly bought into it. It was the competitive end of it, because I tried to do it as quickly as possible because it was a part of a team. And getting out of the lake, I said, God, that's just the most incredible feeling. And I vowed that I would do the full thing the next year, but I didn't. It was 2 years before I did my first full triathlon. But that was my first introduction to it, a 15-minute swim, ironically, that I thought then was the limit of my ability.
Fast forward a couple of years, and a thought came to you of running 32 marathons in 32 days, consecutive days in 32 counties across the country. You said yourself you were up to a couple of hours a week. What brought you from the 3 miles as a heavy smoker to that stage?
I suppose by this stage I was up to 10, 12 miles of running or whatever it was. I always wanted to do a marathon. I'd had this burning ambition. Every year in October, I used to regret on Bank Holiday Monday not doing the Dublin City Marathon. Every year for 20 years I said, you know, you could do that, you should do that, you want to do that, but you haven't done that. So maybe you could do that. And so I signed up for the Dublin City Marathon. And I trained hard for that, and I did it. And I had a, funny enough, I had a wonderfully horrendous experience, because it's the one and only time it's ever happened to me. But we hear of marathon runners hitting the wall, and it's the one and only time I've ever hit the wall. But ironically, I look back on it now as probably one of the best things that ever happened to me in sport, because I learned such a valuable lesson that I never forgot it. I hit the wall at 18 miles, give or take.
I'm quite interested in this, because you talk about this in your first book, Who Dares Runs. It's an excellent read. An old man came out of the crowd as you were hitting the wall in the marathon. Tell us about that.
Yeah, what happened was I started off full of enthusiasm, and I genuinely had trained very, very hard. I didn't leave anything behind in training. But what I didn't know at the time was that you had to pace yourself. And I said, you know, I did the first mile in a minute quicker than the projected time. I had a projected finishing time at the time of 3.5 hours. And I worked out roughly what that would equate to, but I had limited knowledge even at this stage. And the first mile, I did it at rough approximately a minute quicker. I said, this is easy. And then I did the second mile, and then I did the fifth mile, and the eighth mile, and the tenth mile, all at this pace. But it was at around 12, 13, 14 miles that suddenly I was starting, about to serve this major learning or major apprenticeship, because my body was now starting to ask questions of, how did you treat me in mile one, in three, in five, in seven? Because the jury, just to let you know, you actually went too fast, and now we're about to treat you with the same respect that you treated us. You know, I'm speaking purely metaphorically, I guess, but 12, 13, 14 miles, I could slowly start to feel my body leaking in terms of energy, and pain was starting to creep in. And by the time I got to 18 miles, I literally had stopped. I was absolutely exhausted and literally was really struggling, literally to put one foot in front of the other. And I remember stopping, and this man literally just, there was people all around, because Dublin City Marathon is the most incredibly wonderful experience. Crowds everywhere, people everywhere. We were somewhere around the Milltown, generally the Milltown area. It escapes me exactly where it happened now, but I do remember that the...
I think it was Roebuck Road you mentioned.
Roebuck Road, yeah, that's at 18 miles. Yeah. And the route is slightly different now. They changed it the following year. Just made a bit of a change. This old man literally just... He was literally standing right beside me, because I literally stopped to let... Because other runners wanted to continue, and I just literally stopped. And he just put his arm around me and just whispered into my ear, and he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, don't worry. He said, they're all feeling it. He said, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I guarantee you'll reach the finish. And it was just, I was actually crying at the time because I was in such pain. And I said, God, you know, you couldn't but be moved by that, I guess. So I just, you know, so much of our ability I've learned lies in our mental energy, not just in our physical energy. And I said, right, okay, just try. And I got going again, and then I stopped again, and I walked, and I stopped, and I jogged, and I walked. And I think coming over the Sligo bypass, or coming off the Sligo bypass, I think I stopped again. I just keep going, just try not to stop. And eventually I got there. And the ironic thing is, on the face of it, you would think that I was unbelievably close to my goal, because I was only a minute slower than my target. But I did it in a world of pain, because based on where I was at 13, 14 miles, I should have done it in probably something closer to 3 hours than 3.5 hours. But the last hour, I think it took me, I think I did about 5.5 miles in the last hour, so that'll tell you how much I'd slowed. And I didn't come out of the wall until an hour afterwards, because we had parked our car on Stephen's Green, and the finish line is in Merrion Square. As we had to travel back to the car, it was probably only about 700 metres. It took me an hour.
It is the most treacherous walk ever. I remember, I did the marathon in 2011. Lots slower than 3.5 hours. But that walk back to your way home is probably one of the longest walks you'll ever make in your life.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've experienced it. I think anybody that has done a marathon will totally comprehend and understand what it is we're talking about. It's called a marathon. It's an incredible, iconic distance for a reason, you know. You can't bluff it. I'll never forget that hour. I was just in such pain for, now it's all relative, of course, because this was an ambition, a goal, but it taught me such a valuable lesson. I got back to the camper, we camper van, and I got back into the camper, and I got in under a duvet, and I felt sorry for myself for whatever period of time, and then I felt wonderful in the days and weeks afterwards, and it certainly didn't put me off by any stretch of the
imagination. Obviously, because a couple of years later, 32 marathons, why would you even consider doing something like that?
What happened, briefly, was I had done the marathon with a view to doing an Ironman triathlon the following year. And when I got this idea to do an Ironman about 8 or 10 months before the marathon, and I said, well, if you're going to do an Ironman, you haven't done a marathon. Maybe a marathon would be a good stepping stone to get that experience. So what I did was I went, and that's why I did the marathon. And then I went for a year and I trained to do an Ironman distance triathlon, which is the equivalent of 160 lengths of a pool. You cycle roughly from city centre of Dublin to Loughrea in County Galway, and then you run the equivalent of the Dublin City Marathon at the end of that, and that's roughly what an Ironman is. And I went and I did one of those. About a week after that, I met a chap who has since become a very close friend called Ken Whitelaw. And Ken came to me for advice, because he wanted to do a marathon a year later. And he came to my office and we chatted. When he was leaving, he just threw a book on the table and he said, I hear you're into doing, I was doing all kinds of really long stuff at this stage, and he said, you'll really enjoy this book, it's about an adventure runner. And I read the book, and out of the book I just got this idea to run consecutive marathons. And I said, okay, what would be consecutive marathons, what would be very unique? And I figured, well, why not do one in every county on the island of Ireland? And that was an idea I conceived in, I think it was September of 2008. I knew I wasn't nearly fit enough, I wasn't underestimating it, you know, or the magnitude of it. But I said to myself, right, I'm going to give myself 2 years, because it still wasn't realistic. And I said, right, how can you, if you're at a 5 on the fitness ladder,
you've just done an Ironman, so it's not like you're at a 5 on the fitness level to most people. Mm. I mean, you compare yourself to an Olympic athlete, maybe, but comparing yourself to the average population, you're pretty much up there in terms of the elite athletes already at that stage, surely.
Well, thank you. I guess it all depends, it's all relative to where you want to get to. I felt I was at 5 relative to if I was going to run a marathon 26.2 miles every day for 32 days. I figured that's a 10, that's the level I want to get to. So I figured what I've learned in life in a variety of different ways is the best way to get from 5 to 10 is to travel through the numbers in between. And what I mean by that is to do interim events, stepping stones up the ladder that will get you there. So I figured, right, well, how I need to get to an 8. And then if I can get to an 8 and then do another year's training after that, maybe I'd be fit enough. So I found an event in late 2008 that was a double iron distance triathlon. And I figured, I did some research on it, and I figured, okay, 320 lengths of a pool from Dublin to Loughrea and back, and then do back-to-back marathons. And I figured, right, okay, if I train for a year for this event, do it, get that experience in my legs and in my brain, and then train for another year for the 30 marathons, there's a chance you might be able to do it. So I went for and trained for the guts of a year for that, did the event, had a great experience, I have to say, very challenging. It took me 28 hours, just over 28 hours to do the event. But I crossed the finish line, and I actually felt very, very tired, obviously, but I felt okay, and I recovered very quickly from that. Then I said to myself, right, okay, if you train for one more year, and got a training program together, and then set out on that journey to train for one more year to get up to that 10 and then to go and execute that ambition.
Talk us through the 32 marathons. It's the subject of your first book, Who Dares Runs. Ken Whitelaw is a major player in this. He did all the 32 marathons with you,
yes.
As did some of the, I suppose, Irish celebrities, for want of a better word. Mm-hmm. You had people from across the world of Irish media, music, sport joined you to run half marathons, marathons. You even had one Mr. Michael O'Leary.
We did, yeah. We were very fortunate. What we decided to do, Ken came on board, ironically on the flight home from that 28-hour event. Ken was sitting beside me, he was part of my crew. And nobody knew why I was doing the event. I actually kept it very, very quiet why I was doing the double iron distance, because I felt that people wouldn't take me seriously until I'd done this event. And coming back on the flight, I shared with Ken my ambition for the 32 marathons, and I asked him would he like to be a part of it, because at this stage he had done an Ironman himself, and he was much younger than me, much fitter than me, I'm told much better looking than me. I asked him would he be a part of it, but I also shared with him my ambition that I wanted to do it for charity. I wanted to do it for people that were not as lucky as me, and I shared my ambition of the charity I wanted to do it for, and also the hugely ambitious goal that I felt was achievable in terms of fundraising. And it was a significant sum.
We're talking half a million here.
Well, our goal at the time was a figure of about €300,000. People say, said, you'll never do it. You won't run the marathons and you won't raise the money. But we had two of the most important ingredients. We had self-belief, irrefutable self-belief that we could do it. And we had a plan. And the plan was to get different people on different days to come and run a part of the journey with us. And we built the whole event around the number 32. So 32 marathons, 32 days. 32 counties, get an average of 32 runners every day, all of whom we would ask to fundraise for the charity that we wanted to raise the money for. And that was the plan, but then we had to go and market that plan to find over 1,000 people to be a part of it. And we figured, well, how would we get attention to it? So we picked up the phone and we started ringing around celebrities and musicians and sports people and one CEO of an airline, and everybody came on board. Like, people were incredibly taken with the concept of it, and so delighted to be a part of it. They all literally said, absolutely, because we asked them to come and run it as well, to run a leg.
Yeah, you're not just asking someone to come and be a photo op. You're actually asking them to run a half marathon, which is, for any normal Joe Soap, running a half marathon is not something you just undertake like.
No, it's not. And I remember being on the phone to that particular gentleman.
You're allowed to name him.
Yeah, Mr. O'Leary. And he said, what do you want? Now, there was a connection there. Like, we didn't know each other, but I said, I want you to run a marathon. And he said, not a chance. And he said, tell me about the event. And I told him about the event. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'll do the marathon. He said, but I'll do it over 2 days. He said, I'll run a half marathon somewhere, and then I'll do another half marathon. And of course, we were thrilled with that.
You doubled the exposure.
Yeah. And it was great. He was wonderful, as were so many others. Like, we were so blessed to have literally a who's who of the
celebrities. It's almost like a VIP magazine when you open the book, book, looking through the various people who've been a part of your event, and you did raise in the region of €500,000.
Yeah, the final tally, thankfully, through the collective help of, I'm very keen to always stress this, directly or indirectly, 2,500 people helped in the event, and they're the people, as I say, we conceived the idea and coordinated it, but it couldn't have happened without all of those people. And the final tally was just over €500,000, thankfully. Yeah.
And the charity was?
The principal charity was Irish Autism Action. And we also, there was a donation provided for the Irish Cancer Society as well. But we did it primarily for autism and to raise funds and to raise awareness for autism as well. So thankfully we ticked all the boxes. It was a great success and great. It was a great goal, great ambition, and so many people were a part of it, and so many people made their debut half marathons or full marathons.
The actual preparation and the logistics and the planning of such an event it's a huge challenge, but it's almost secondary to actually going out and having the challenge of completing 32 full distance marathons in the course of a month, basically, across the country, and the logistics of moving around. How did your body cope with that?
I guess that doing that event, the 28-hour event, put great endurance in my legs, huge learning from a variety of different points, but also great self-confidence because I had such a good experience there. And I crossed the finish line, and I was very tired in that 28-hour event, but I got such confidence in myself of, you know, like 28 hours non-stop swimming, cycling, running is a serious ambition and a serious, growth for me, because I was I maybe even 40 at this stage, or maybe 41. But I did that, and then with 30 marathons, we trained savagely hard. Ken came on board, and we literally trained, like we were doing up to 4.5 marathons a week in training, you know, 3, 4, 5 months out. And people say, how do you do 32 marathons in 32 days? Well, we were doing back-to-back marathons at weekends, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, going out and running for 4 or 5 hours on our feet, doing 31-mile training runs, this kind of thing. Also, nutrition and rest and physio and psychology was such a big part of it.
What were your backup and support in that? Because obviously, that's kind of the thing that people don't see of the whole elite athlete. And you are an elite athlete. It's the outside that people don't see the whole support, nutrition, strength and conditioning. Mm. Who's there to help you with all that work?
One of the things I've learned, Bethany, is you know, to achieve any goal, and I guess the more challenging goal, the more we need to do it, is to surround yourself with great people. And we surrounded ourselves with a wonderful crew. In terms of the physical challenge, we obviously had a chartered physio on board. We had a food scientist who was also an ultra runner and an elite ultra runner. Our training program was designed by a professional ultra runner. So we had all these incredible people around us. Obviously, you know, through programs or through phone calls or through training sessions or whatever. But we began the journey on the 2nd of July 2010. And we were very respectful of the fact that, okay, day one, day two, we had to be thinking of day 31 and day 32, because on day 25 our bodies were going to say, well, how did you look after me 3 weeks ago? Because we were...
So this is kind of a bigger version of hitting the wall on the first marathon?
Yeah, and I'd learned that pacing is so important. So the first day we ran a very conservative, we did it in 4:39, I think. And interestingly enough, at mile 18, both of us actually felt a little bit sore, but what we realised very within a mile or two was the fact that we had tapered for 3 weeks. Leading into it, where we just significantly dropped our workload. So our bodies, to a tiny degree, had forgotten what it was like to do a long run. Day two, day three, day four, we always hovered around the 4.5 hour mark. On the sixth day, Ken got injured. It then became a completely different experience for him. It became a case of, can he finish it? Because days 6, 7, 8, and 9 were just, for him, were another nightmare. It was the luck of the draw if one of us was going to get injured or not. And unfortunately for him, it happened to him.
Was there ever a chance that he wouldn't finish
on the ninth night? It looked like he was gone, and I just finished a marathon in Kerry, and he literally had to walk it. Now this guy is super fit, 30 years of age, he'd done broken 3 hours in his first ever marathon in his debut, like a very, very experienced and a very fast runner, just a completely different challenge, and he'd gotten injured in the Waterford marathon. So by the time we got to Kerry, he was literally walking. He didn't want to give up, but it actually took him 9 hours to do it, and it looked like he was finished. And we were driving up to Kerry, or up to Limerick from Kerry. We rang our own physio, and she drove down to meet us in Limerick. She started work on him in the hotel at midnight, and he got off the plane at 1 o'clock. And people, you say, well, how did you do this incredible challenge? And we say, well, it was 25 boxes every day, and one of the boxes was an ice bath that we had to get into every day for 10 minutes. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, he had the wherewithal and the foresight to say, I haven't done my ice bath. And yet it was 1 o'clock in the morning. So we filled the bath with ice. He got into it for 10 minutes, and after 8 minutes, I went in to tell him he'd only 2 minutes left and to see was he okay. And I went into the bathroom and I looked at him, he was fast asleep in the ice bath. That'll give an idea of how tired he was. But he went to bed, our physio worked on him again at 7:30 the next morning, and he went from a 9-hour marathon to, I think, a 7 or 7.5 hour marathon the next day. And then slowly over 3 or 4 days, he got his times back. Then a week later, it came back worse. His times dropped again, but in the last week he was doing sub 4 hours every day, which is hard to credit, but it's true. Both of us ran our fastest marathon on the 27th day, just with no divine master plan, just by coincidence. But progressively, I was fortunate in the fact that I remained injury-free, so I consistently got faster every week. All of my fastest marathons, just like Ken, were in the last week, where we were doing an average of 3.5 hours every day. I think after about 2 weeks, I noticed significant improvement, where I was improving by 5 or 6 or 7 minutes every day, but with the same level of effort. And that was a massive learning curve. But when I reflected on it afterwards, I realised that whilst I'm an amateur sports person, I brought a professional, and so Ken brought utter professionalism to our preparation from every angle.
For the first part of the interview, I'm delighted you could come into us and have a chat with us. We always let the guest pick the song that plays us out. Have you picked a piece of music for us?
I have indeed, and it's not a conventional one. I'm going to confuse listeners.
We like not conventional on this show.
I would imagine if I said the name Steve Jablonski, I wouldn't get too many, "Oh, I know that man."
No, it's completely over my head.
But certainly our younger listeners might be familiar with the film I've never actually seen, called Transformers. But this is a piece of music from that film, and it's very motivational. And I put together a short video myself that I've created of my experience in the Decca. And I have this music as part of the backdrop for the visual that people see when they see that video. And it just really inspires me and motivates me, and I hope the listeners enjoy it. It's called Arrival to Earth.
My guest this week on the Sporting Spotlight was Gerry Duffy. It's the first of a two-part episode. We'll be back next week talking to him about the Decca Ironman Challenge. The piece of music we're going to be finishing the show with today is from Steve Jablonski. It's from the soundtrack to Transformers, and it's called Arrival to Earth.